Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Gridiron Beauty Blitz, the number one source for women's tackle football news 24/7 on Twitter, here on Blog Talk Radio and UltimateSportsTalk.com, who covers major sports. You can find them on Twitter at UltimateSportsTalk. So I am your host, Erica Lynn Anderson, and we will be talking NFL and the Australia women's game tonight. And I am on with the lovely and wonderful Ntishi Free. Hey, Ntishi, how are you?
Hi, Erica. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. How are you?
Girl, just running around trying to get this last-minute back-to-school stuff because, you know, school starts tomorrow. So trying to make sure everybody's book bags are packed and they've got their outfits picked out for tomorrow and all that other fun stuff.
I hear you. My kids go back to school tomorrow, too, and after the show, actually, that's what I will be doing. I will be dispersing the 1 billion school supplies I had to buy and making sure outfits and making them go to bed in a timely manner and making sure lunch stuff is around. So, I hear you.
I'm so in that place. And it's so funny because, like, you know, of course, with me having twins, then, of course, everything is double for the same grade. Mm-hmm. See, like, if the kids were staggered, I would still have to have a lot of the same stuff. But, you know, they have different things for different levels as opposed to trying to fit all the exact same things in for the exact same grade. And then they've made it difficult this year because they're actually requiring things by color code. Like, when we were kids, it was just, you have to have 3 notebooks, spiral binds, and that was it. They didn't tell you that you had to have a specific color.
I know. My oldest two are actually only like 10 months apart, so they're kind of like twins. They're in the same grade. So I hear you on that. They're both going into fourth grade. They start fourth grade. So it's always by 2 of everything for them. So I definitely hear you on that. So and it's a boy and a girl, though, and I don't know if your twins are a girl or what. But so then it's like same thing, but they don't want the same color, of course. Mm-hmm. So
I do. I have boy-girl twins, and that's exactly what it is.
Okay.
Nobody wants the same color, and trying to make everything match in terms of their personalities and the color schemes is so much fun.
Exactly. I know. I hear you. And I started school this week, so I got to make sure my stuff's in order. Yeah, you know, but.
Yay, I'm so happy for you.
Thanks. Yeah. So we want to give you a reminder that the huddle is sponsored by Zazzle.com. Go to our shop and get some cool stuff like tees, hoodies, and gifts that you can customize. Zazzle.com/gridironbeauties. Every sale helps us promote another talented player internationally on our social media platforms. Use code ORDERSHIP10 and save 10% now. So the huddle basically is me and Ntishi tonight, and that's pretty awesome. Eric cannot make it. But from here on out, the show will be moving to Mondays, you guys, just so you know that. Oscar and Ntishi will be full-time doing the show Monday evenings. What time was it again, Ntishi?
I think it's going to be 10 o'clock Eastern Standard Time and 7 o'clock Pacific Time.
Okay. So, and 10 p.m. Eastern. And Eric and I, you know, Eric says he will hopefully be able to drop in. Not sure yet if, you know, what mine's looking like, but this is my last full-time show. It has been fun and you know, it's been a great run. So let's kind of make it count. Maybe I can find a rant or two up my sleeve. So
I know. Well, but you've got a lot going on, and you know, I just want to let you know that I am so proud of you for going back to school. I mean, that is so amazing, and you know, that's not something to be taken lightly. And then I know, you know, having gotten both my bachelor's and my master's, what the time commitment it takes, and especially you're doing it with kids. So I commend you, and I give you so much props for, you know, taking this on. But I am going to miss you and Eric both dearly, and I am going to look forward to those shows when you guys drop back in.
Oh, thank you so much. Yeah, you know, it was wasn't the easiest decision, but I know it's the right one, and it'll pay off. All the hard work and the tears and the frustrations will definitely pay off in the end when I get that degree. I know that. So, yeah,
absolutely, and we'll still be in touch. So it's not like you're going too far.
Definitely. No, I'm not moving to Siberia or Antarctica. So. Twitter and Facebook, and we have, you know, everything's still there. So definitely it will be, we'll still be able to keep in touch. And football bonds us forever, right?
Absolutely. That's the beauty of this.
Tomorrow is the last day for the Gridiron Beauty Contest, August 31st. Send a killer on-field play pick with the hashtag NoJokeFootball to @GridironBeauty. To enter on Twitter. Gridiron Beauty is on Instagram as well under the same name. So you can, I'm sure you can send the pic there. Do not forget the hashtag NoJokeFootball. So the women's game in Australia is kicking off. Obviously, Australia, their seasons are opposite of ours. So when our women's game ends, theirs kicks off. So that's always fun. There's always women's football on. The first game of the Ladies Gridiron League kicks off with the Halloween Bowl with the Adelaide Phoenix versus the Brisbane Blaze. Quarterback Lisa Fife, lineman Larissa Torrenzo, and wide receiver Elisabetta Del Rey, and the Phoenix have been training for 2 years for this chance. And the Phoenix will be taking on social media juggernaut the Brisbane Blaze, led by Kenesha Sims and quarterback Chrissy Street. The game is in Richmond, South Australia, City Mazda Stadium at 8 p.m. Gates open at 6:30. Tickets are on sale now, and you can find the link for that at LGLAUST for LGL Australia. So if you're in Australia or if you're rich and you have the money to just travel wherever you want, there you go. There's Halloween, October 31st. That may be, you know, maybe take a little trip. We'll jaunt over to Australia and watch the kickoff for the Ladies Gridiron League. Game of the Gridiron Queensland is September 4th. The Logan City Jets are playing the Panthers Female Gridiron Club. And in the WFL, the Women's Football League, inauguration title 2015, the Red Devils beat the V-Queens Saltillo 31-19. The Red Devils will face the Rangers next weekend in the inaugural final WFL 2015. So really exciting for the women's game. You can head to Gridiron Beauty Facebook page. Also, LGL Australia has their own Facebook page, Women's Gridiron of Australia. They all have their own Facebook page, so you definitely want to search these. They have awesome pictures of these women, you know, in their uniforms playing. There's also ticket info, all of that. So definitely search that on Facebook and on Twitter. I had to remember what the social media outlet was called. On Twitter, at LGLAUST. And then there is also a couple other that I did not write down, but I will get them to you. They are at WFL Official and the at Women's Gridiron, at Mile FL, obviously, is the Legends Football League. And you can also find, you know, IWFL and WFA, all of that on Twitter. So you definitely want to get on there and look, even though the seasons are over for these, for the WFA, LFL, IWFL, they still have news and things like that. So definitely go check them out, as well as Gridiron Beauties, because we basically retweet everything from there. So we're kind of a central hub for women's gridiron news. So that does it for the women's gridiron. So for the rest of the, I would say half hour or so, me and Nkeshi will be talking about the NFL. So, you know, we had some games played this week, and we had some people being really stupid this week, which, no big surprise, injuries, all that kind of fun stuff. So, let's, the first anybody watched the Steelers-Ravens game, but, or Redskins, sorry, not Steelers, the Redskins.
Oh, yeah, Redskins,
Yes, I don't know why I said Steelers. The Redskins Ravens game, there was an interesting fight that broke out, and Steve Smith Sr. was kicked out as well as Chris Culliver. Ejected. So, I watched the video. Now, the guy who made the tackle, the initial tackle, Keenan Robinson.
He was wrong.
It was. I was going to say, Keisha, I don't know if you watched it, but that there was no reason for a pile drive tackle. I am sorry,
ever.
But there are other ways
ever
to tackle. That was dangerous. But
absolutely,
it got quickly out of control, and Steve Smith felt like he had to start a side fight with Chris Culliver, and they were both ejected. So
okay, let me just say, for the record, I was totally on Steve Smith's side, and I am an unapologetic Steve Smith Sr. supporter. I know that, and that's the thing. People keep forgetting, and that's what the Redskins, you know, there's this quote that says, you're going to learn today. Oh, the Skins, they learned yesterday. Just because he hasn't been cutting up in the past 5 years, you people forget that that is one of the most passionate players in the NFL. And he didn't mind fighting and taking his own teammates to the grass. And he has no problem with supporting. And if he doesn't mind fighting his teammates, he doesn't mind fighting for his teammates. And his passion is undeniable, and it is infectious. And while I don't condone violence, what the Skins did was so – what the Skins player did was so just horrific that I was cheering for Steve Smith Sr., and I was totally 110% on his side.
Yeah, I'm gonna be honest, as a player, you know, he's a great, you know, receiver. I'm not a Ravens fan in general. Obviously, being a Patriots fan, you probably know the history between the Ravens and the Patriots. So I'm not a big Ravens fan in general.
Yes.
I don't like Smith's attitude. I'm not a huge fan of that particular attitude. But, you know, again, you're big, aggressive, you know, like you said, passionate men. Playing a game where your job is to tackle and to hit the other guy, that, like you said, it does not condone the way that guy tackled, because you tackle within the limits of the game, and that was just wrong. But
because what if you could have broken his neck, could have been broken anything.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, as opposed to wrestlers who practice landing, he didn't practice landing that way, right?
No.
I mean, if you really looked at the way he pile-drived him, his
man
was in a perfect L shape. That literally
he
could have been a paralyzing blow.
Exactly. It was very dangerous and uncalled for. There, you know, there's a reason why we say wrap up, okay? Wrap up. That's how you tackle. Wrap up. Learn it. So that
exactly.
That's really interesting. If you had been watching the game, or like me, I had watched it after the fact. It was definitely interesting. I'm sad to say that James Devlin, the fullback for the Patriots, broke his tibia in the game against the Packers in the fourth quarter on Friday. It was so, and you know, it wasn't like a super gross one, but you could tell how he broke it. He planted, and then the guy grabbed him, and he twisted, and you can tell it just. The good thing is from what I read, he didn't damage ligaments and stuff in there, so they don't, they say 6 to 8 weeks. He does have to have surgery, but that is the good news. It is definitely, it's sad just because he's such a a good guy, and he's great to have on the team. But, you know, fullbacks are important. If you, you know, really are watching, if you watch a lot of football, you really see how important your fullback is. So it'll be interesting now to see the out and Brown, or I can't even, Bolden and, you know, some of our other running backs. It'll be interesting to see their output. So, yeah, we'll just have to, I'm sure we'll be looking for another fullback. Belichick probably has somewhere.
And, of course, and that's the thing. Right now, the injuries for me, you know, because I'm going through the list. I've got, you know, of course, the complete list right now pulled up in front of me of all the teams and, you know, and I'm not actually, and I'm not even paying attention to the probables or the questionables because those are just tactics as far as I'm concerned. I'm only concerned with the out. And, you know, with the out, the ones that are the ones that are concerning me because the people who are getting out are major players for these teams. Like, you know, you just listed it out. But even though he may not be out for the entire season, he's going to be out long enough that it's going to have an impact.
Yeah.
You know.
I know.
You know, my Cowboys, we just lost Orlando Scandrick, you know, to a torn ACL and MCL. You know, he's out. I mean, the injuries are really starting to pile up. Johnny Manziel, I'm not really sure what's going on with that one. You know, it's the whole it's the elbow thing. And I don't know if – I mean, I'm sure it is sore and everything, but I'm wondering why is that really a concern if he's not the starter. You know, but I guess it's maybe it's the story just because he's Johnny Manziel.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I think, I think that's why it's a story, to be honest.
And then the Packers had another setback. The Packers had a setback with Randall Cobb. You know, he's got an AC joint sprain.
Yeah.
And, of course, after having lost Jordy Nelson, they can't afford to have Cobb get injured.
Yeah, I know. It could have been a lot worse. I think they're lucky that Cobb didn't tear something, you know, that he didn't. So that's Packers are lucky there, right? What's that?
Oh, no, they were. I was trying to find out what was going on with Phillip Rivers. See, he had
get hurt in the game against Seattle.
He did. He banged his hand, his throwing hand, as he released the ball. The player, I can't remember who they were playing now, just went off the top of my head just that fast. But he inadvertently ran into Rivers' hand. As Rivers was cut throwing the releasing the ball, his hand hit the helmet of the player. On the defense, and so they're saying that's who it was. It was Seahawks. Thank you. Rivers left the game with an injury to his finger on his throwing hands, but the X-rays are negative, according to the San Diego Union-Tribune. And he was 13 for 19 for 140 yards for departing. So, you know, he was really doing well in that game. And so, you know, it's the throwing hand, though. I mean, even though the X-rays are negative, you still don't want swelling on the fingers where you've got to throw the ball as opposed to – well, you don't want swelling on your fingers, period, because that's going to impact how they are able to grip the ball.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I didn't hear about – I hadn't heard about that one.
I was actually watching that game when that one happened.
I did hear that one of the Seahawks rookie was accused of attacking Phillip Rivers while under a pile. So, I don't.
Oh, I heard about that one. But you know what? I kept looking for that play, and I didn't see it, which is not to say that it didn't happen. But because it was a pile on, it's so hard sometimes, you know, see what happens.
Definitely.
I definitely saw the hand when his hand hit the helmet, and it wasn't intentional. It was really just a perfect storm of bad timing.
Yeah, and I've seen that happen to quarterbacks before, and you know, it's a helmet. It doesn't have any give. It's not like you know, it's you're going to bruise your hands. That's definitely a good thing that, you know, happened in week three of the preseason. He's got a couple weeks. If the x-rays were negative, he's got a couple weeks to have that, you know, bruise or whatever's going on heal up. So for the Chargers, Chargers and Chargers fans, that's good news. Definitely. I know, you know, it seems like there's been a lot of injuries this, you know, stretching from really the start of training camp, extending into preseason. It seems like there's a ton of injuries, weird ones. You know, there are various ones, but it just seems like there's a lot of torn ligaments, broken bones, things like that. It's puzzling because it seems like it's more than in other years. I don't know about you, but I feel like the last couple of years even, there's been more injuries than there have been in past years.
Yeah.
I don't know what that could be related to because it's on all different teams. And so I don't know if it's, I just don't know what it could be, but it's definitely puzzling to me that there could be that many injuries. So
I'm agreeing with you, and I'm seeing, and I don't know if it's, there's an increase in injuries or if it's because of, and again, I will attribute this to the 24-hour constant media feed. You know, are we just hearing more about them because of how we focus on the teams and the access we have to them versus whether or not it's really, you know, as many as before? Like, I was having this conversation, and not to, you know, sidestep, but I was having this conversation with someone else, and they were saying, oh my gosh, there's all these fights now. And I'm like, are you serious? It's not that there are more fights. It's that we have more access. I mean, you've got Hard Knocks. You've got 24-hour social media feeds. Each team has their own social media person designated to disseminate information. In addition to, you now have sports writers who are writing and, you know, not just writing stories anymore, but they have to make sure they get their stories out on Twitter. Then they actually have to go back and write the actual story itself. And, you know, we just have so much access to the team that we know much more about them than we ever would before.
Yeah. But I do feel like there's been more fighting this year. I don't know. I feel like in training camp and these joint practices and things, and I know, like you said, yeah, there's more cameras, there's more, but I do feel like there's been more fighting even the last couple of years on the field during games than there has been in the past. And I mean, I know it's always been a reality. We've talked about football players and their mentality and things like that. But part of it is I honestly think that it's the tone that Goodell is setting in the league. You know what I mean?
Okay.
I really feel like the way we're seeing the league kind of transition and go, the way we're seeing players, the things they're doing and all the coaches and all this, I honestly feel like part of that is the tone that Richard Goodell is setting in the NFL. He has set kind of this, you know, and he comes down hard on certain players but doesn't come down hard on others. He's really inconsistent with his discipline and what he deems as bad,
right,
what he deems is an offense. And their rules are rules for a reason. Rules are so that they're fair for everybody. So no matter who breaks them, there's a clear punishment there laid out, and that's what you do. And Goodell has almost sidestepped that and made it his own playground. He makes the rules. He gets to do. He gets to decide what happens to you. And I feel like the conduct of the league right now has a lot to do with Roger Goodell's conduct and how he's handling everybody.
Well, do you think the league was better when Tagliabue was the commissioner?
I do. I mean, you know, I would say I'm more focused on football, you know, with writing about it and stuff since Goodell has been commissioner. So I would say I wasn't as informed when he was commissioner as I am now. But, yeah, I do. And obviously you have the stuff. I mean, there's always going to be criminals. There's always going to be people doing things. But I think that when you have a commissioner that is very no-nonsense and is respected, that's another difference here, is that Roger Goodell is not respected by the owners and he's not respected by the players. And when you lose, you know, essentially your employees' respect, when you lose the respect of people you're representing, they don't care at that point. Why would they listen to what you're setting forth? they don't agree with you. And at least when you don't agree with someone but you respect them, you kind of fall in line. You're kind of like, okay, well, I respect you enough to do what I'm supposed to do. Roger Goodell has lost that. And
okay.
So I do. I that's in my opinion. I honestly feel like that's kind of what's going on right now. And I think it's time for Roger Goodell to resign his position, and it's time for the NFL to find somebody that will be respected by owners and players, and that can set a precedent in the NFL of, you know, we're not going to take crap. These are the rules. If you break the rules, this is the punishment. I don't care who you are, who you're related to, or what team you play for. This is it, you know. So, anyway, there's
it's a valid point, because that's been topic of conversation that I've been hearing on some of the local sports, radio shows is, mm-hmm. you know, they always talk about coaches in the hot seat. Is Goodell in the hot seat, especially in light of the whole Deflategate? Now, granted, I know you have a biased mm-hmm. opinion, so I want to be fair in that you have a biased opinion with regard to Deflategate,
yeah.
but is him doing all of this an effort to address what you just said about fairness and equity in dispensing punishment? Maybe because people don't feel he's fair and he's not equitable, he's trying to go after the team that most people feel, in all fairness, have gotten away with doing a lot of borderline tactics. Mm-hmm. And this isn't an attack per se, it's a perception amongst other teams and other fans that the Patriots are borderline. Maybe it's not technically illegal, but is it ethical? And are you just skirting the boundaries? And maybe in the effort to try to bring some quote-unquote justice, you know, that's why he's pressing mm-hmm. Deflategate so hard. Is that possible? I'm not saying that he's doing it the right way or that he's using the right vehicle. I'm asking objectively, could this be him trying to rectify?
I do. I think that he is saying, okay, so everybody, we could pretty much state that most NFL fans, most teams in the NFL hate the Patriots, Tom Brady. I know how they view the Patriots. Obviously, I'm not blind to that reality. So, yeah, I think that Goodell was almost trying to gain favor with people by saying, hey, look, you hate him so much, but I'm bending hard on him, you know, type thing. He was viewed as being friends with Kraft, and I think that's part of the reason why he punished the Patriots so much, was that for Deflategate, the punishment for Deflategate was that everybody said, well, he's best friends with Kraft, blah, blah, blah. So he went overboard. And then, but when you look at that, that's not fair either. You know what I mean? You can't overcompensate. It's like in an NFL game, and we've all seen it, when refs call PI on a team and everybody knows it wasn't PI, so they turn around and call the same penalty on the other team when they didn't do anything just so they can even the table. You know what I mean? That's not right.
Right.
You made a mistake, but you can't make up for that mistake by making another mistake. And I feel like that's what Goodell's doing here, like you said, is that he's trying to make up for other deficiencies by now being too hard. I mean, you would give Brady the same amount of games as Greg Hardy when we look at what Greg Hardy did. I mean, in all fairness, that's not even in the ballpark of what Brady's being accused of. So, yeah, I think he's definitely trying to make up ground, but he's doing it in the wrong way. It's kind of like you've got to just cut your losses and start fresh, start from scratch, and then, you know, you can't make up for past mistakes by making more mistakes. That's, you know, illogical. So I definitely think that's why this Deflategate thing got so huge and why he refused to back down, is because of the perception that he has, you know. And you've heard NFL players come out and say, this is ridiculous. Brady didn't deserve that time, you know, this and that. And so people are very... that have to do with the NFL anywhere, very well aware of the deficiencies of Roger Goodell's office, because then you see the people below him are the things that they do, the mistakes that they're making, again, he's setting the tone for that. They're following his lead. And but yeah, that's definitely, I think, a part of the Deflategate thing.
Okay. Well, I think that's a fair assessment in terms of, you know, in terms of looking at this particular situation. But I definitely think that right now, and again, it could be because we have so much more access to the team, that as fans and as professional sports analysts, which is what we are, you know, we may not be on a major media outlet, but we're still professional sports analysts and commentators. And I think that because of the vehicles vehicles like ours, media outlets such as ours, we have much more access and information to the teams than we had before, which I think is adding to a general, while the NFL as an organization is just ridiculously making boatloads of money in financially, they're in the best position they've ever been. Amongst fans, there's this whole sense of dysfunction, you know, and calamity and chaos. I mean, a perfect example, two teams that literally look like they are a house imploding on themselves are the San Francisco 49ers and the Washington Redskins. Those two teams right now are just looking like walking disasters, you know, in terms of what all is happening, from the retirement to the trades to, you know, the player punishments. And I'm wondering, and I'm going to have to agree with you, that that's the role of the commissioner, is you've got to be the lead and you've got to be the head. And I think that when there is this much dysfunction at the top, it is trickling down to how the organizations are run.
Yeah, I think so. I definitely, and it's a shame because it's ruining the perception of the NFL. You know, people are seeing it, you know, that it's a thug league and that it's this and that and a league full of cheaters. When, yeah, are there people that are skirting the rules? And let's be honest, every single team does it. Does that make it right? No, not by any means. I would never condone cheating just because everybody does it. But every single team out there skirts the rules some way. They find a way to do it. And the very definition of cheating is to go outside the rules to gain a competitive advantage. So all the teams do it. You know, it just so happens some odd reason that the Patriots get paid for it every time. But it's, I don't know. It is. It seems like teams are very disorganized, not all teams. But, you know, you see it in every – you see it in all units, though. You know, when the coach is not leading like he's supposed to, the entire team is in disarray. And when you go further up the ladder, it's going to be the same. And so I really think the only course of action here is for Goodell to resign. I don't see in his conduct since he's been commissioner that he can handle the responsibilities. He cannot handle the duties to which, you know, that he is assigned, essentially. And I think that we need to start finding a new commissioner.
Well, see, now herein lies the other side of that, is that, you know, and a lot of people, and I've heard this said, and I have to say that to some degree I can see this, in that, you know, he's hired by the owners. And in that regard, he's doing what the owners want them to do. He's making them money. Unfortunately, they're making money at the expense of the quality of the game. That's my take. The dysfunction that's happening right now in Washington is a perfect example of that. You have a team, a storied franchise. Now, you know, we're not even going to go into the whole name side of it, but in terms of the history of the team, but the history in terms of their emotional value, you know, I'm not talking about the history of the name, but history in terms of the emotional value that this organization has for the Washington
what we call the DMV, the District, Maryland, and Virginia. You know, what this team and this organization means to the fan base here in the DMV, very important. And I think that that speaks also to, you know, what's more important in terms of how these teams are being led. Because what's happening in the D.C. and Washington is dysfunction at its highest level. There's so much dysfunction here, it's ridiculous. And again, I have to say that speaks to leadership. But if Goodell is doing what the owners want, which is making the money, because to some level, this ridiculous controversy is also contributing to interest, which is contributing to keeping the team's name in the news, even if it's not for good reasons. I know some people say all PR is good PR. I, as a PR professional, I disagree with that. But, it's all, I think, tying into each other. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, he does. He works for the owners. If the owners really wanted him out, they could get him out, you know? And that is a good point. I mean, the owners are partly to blame, and I mean all 32 owners are to blame for the state that the league is in now. Because you hired him, you're the one that looked at his qualifications, and you're the ones that decided to say that he was the guy we wanted. And he is. He's making them a ton of money. Like you said, the league is more profitable now than ever before. It's just insane. But I think that the league would be profitable no matter who they put in there. It's a very marketable, I mean, the NFL, I mean, it's, you know, changing commissioners is not, I don't think would change the profit margin by much in the NFL. And I think that if you got the conduct under control, I think that if you could change the way the game is perceived and change the way people are viewing the NFL now, you could make even more money. So, think that if you got a commissioner in there that people, and not just, you know, people in the NFL, but fans, that they respected the commissioner, I feel like you might make some more money. I don't know. But it's, the owners are partly to blame for it. They could get him out if they really wanted to. So.
Well, you know what? Speaking of Tagliabue, and I forgot about this. There was an article in Sporting News, and it's back in January 2015, and Paul Tagliabue blamed Goodell for the NFL's PR woes. According to, let me pull the article up because. I was thinking about something, which was I wanted to know, you know, when you were saying about, you know, in terms of anyone could do the job, that got me thinking. Tagliabue held this position, you know, and I couldn't remember the number of years, but almost the entire time that I have been a sports fan, I knew that Tagliabue has been the commissioner. So that's the only one I've known. You know, I know that the old heads probably have known others, but according to the article, it was in Sporting News, and the author was Stephen Gaither, January 27, 2015. It says that the current NFL commissioner and his predecessor rarely talk, and that Roger Goodell and Paul Tagliabue haven't communicated much since Goodell succeeded him in 2006. So that speaks a lot. So, so there has to be, you know, we're both hitting on something clearly, you know.
Yeah. I mean, you look at how much Roger Goodell makes. He makes $44 million a year. Does he deserve $44 million a year? Now, again, who decides the salary? That's, you know, but it's ridiculous. The mess he has made, $44 million. I mean, not only do regular people not get paid $44 million, but if we were to make the mistakes and do the things, you know, make the mistakes that Goodell has made, if we did that in our regular jobs, we would be fired so fast. Oh, my gosh, it's ridiculous. We would have been standing on the unemployment line. And so the allowances that are being made for him are inexcusable. And I am speaking to the owners as well because he works for them. And so it's unfortunate, and it makes me so angry that to what he's done. You know, this is an amazing game. And it's a wonderful league, and I feel like he's destroying it. So
right. Well, so according to this, according to Wikipedia, because I knew I had to find out because I just needed to know. Tagliabue held the office from 1989 to 2006, and he was preceded by Pete Rozelle. So that's a long time because, you know, in the 80s, I was just a kid. So, you know, it was like, oh, I was a fan, but, you know, not anything, you know, like where I am now. You know what I'm saying? Not a professional. I was a kid who was just a fan. Yeah, go team. You know, but, you know, all of my knowledge and insight and true understanding of the game really occurred under Tagliabue. So, and he's really credited for how much the league has expanded and grown. And I think that, you know, and of course, transitioning the team through Katrina, through 9/11, I mean, that was huge.
Yeah.
Those were huge, critical moments in the history of the NFL. And I think they had the right person in the right place at the right time. And I honestly have to agree with you. I don't think Goodell could have handled the reins during those two historic moments.
Yeah,
I agree. I don't see it. I don't see it at all.
Yeah, I agree with you.
I'm absolutely glad that we had him there at that time. I think part of the problem, too, is that people have always felt that Tagliabue was too soft on the players and that it was under him that we had, you know, like a lot of the rogue stuff. But again, I say we don't really know how much players have been doing for years in their personal lives because, again, social media has totally changed how we interact with teams, how we interact with players, and it has also taken away a lot of their personal privacy.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
You know, they used to be able to do stuff and be people. When they came off the field, they just got to be normal people. They are living 110% under the microscope at all times.
Yeah, and I think the issue that comes with that is that the media, one, is very fickle, and two, is that you don't get the entire story. You know, we advance, we have 24/7 news coverage, but one, how much can you trust that it's true, that it's factual news coverage? And that, you know, like, you know, prime example, honestly, is the Patriots and the initial report that ESPN, who we're supposed to be able to trust, released about the deflated football. It was so completely wrong. The reporter didn't fact check it. He did anything, and he released the story in the entire world. And that is what has contributed to the tone and the view of the Patriots right now is that initial report. And when they corrected themselves, it was so under the radar, it was barely a blip when they corrected themselves. But when they released that report, you bet your ass that it was big news, and oh my gosh, it's on the ticker on the bottom for, you know, forever. And so that's the problem there too, is that we're getting all this information that we're not completely sure is true. And it's out of context. You hear about, you know, a player did this, but they don't tell you the situation. And so all of a sudden everybody hates the player, but we have no idea what happened before or after. We just get, you know, and who, you know, I think everybody can testify that they have been misunderstood or taken something out of context or been taken out of context and had something just messy end up. And that is contributing to the view of the players and the game itself. So
I think so.
Yeah.
No, I agree. I absolutely agree.
Yeah, journalism integrity is you know, not obviously not all, because I know you do and I do as well, but there's a lot of them out there that just want that shock value. They don't care about the integrity of it. They don't care who it's going to ruin or what effect it's going to have. And, you know, like I said, that report with the initial page, I think, I also think that if ESPN had released a correct report, I don't even know that the NFL would have reacted the way they have reacted. And I don't know that there would have been as big of an investigation. That's what, $2 million investigation launched? I don't know that that would happen if ESPN hadn't broken the story the way they did and said what they did. So if you look at the effect that media has, and it's huge.
Well, and that also speaks to something that you said, too, about journalistic integrity is, you know, as much as, and I want to make sure that I'm clear on this, if it weren't for the ability for blogging and social media, you and I wouldn't have an outlet. So I'm very clear on that. Mm-hmm. You know, it would be much harder. However, as someone that does have 2 degrees in communication, who actually has studied journalism and taken journalism style writing courses, has taken, you know, intro to broadcasting. And, you know, even though I still went to the PR side of the field, there is something to be said for the fact that this isn't for everybody. And I think that to some small degree, having all of these multimedia outlets allows so many unqualified individuals to have an impact on the game that we love and on the media output and on what information is communicated and how it's disseminated. There is something to be said for the fact that, you know what, this is a profession. This is a professional field, and it's okay to be qualified to do this. Because when you lose that sense of understanding that this is a specialized field, everybody can't do everything. I'm not an accountant.
Yeah.
So I'm not going to go and start an accounting practice just because I want to be an accountant, you know. And unfortunately, on some level, we're seeing some of these ramifications, too, in terms of what's happening to the game that we love based on what's reported and how it's impacting the game, because everybody didn't go to school to be a journalist. Everyone doesn't understand journalistic integrity or journalistic and media ethics and writing, a crazy concept. There's an actual file of how you're supposed to write your releases and how scores are supposed to be crafted and put up. And, you know, and you and I have even talked about that with the women's game. I struggle with keeping up with the scores sometimes, and I thank God for Oscar, because I'm used to, because of my training, I'm used to, this is how scores are supposed to look, this is how information is supposed to be put up here, this is what I'm supposed to read, this is what these acronyms stand for. And when I'm reading some of the women's games, I'm like, what is this? What happened? It's hard for me to follow because I'm used to following something else because of that's how I was trained. You know, that's what I was taught, that's what this stands for. And, you know, and that goes back to, again, this is a skill and it must be respected and it must be taught. Yeah. And it's okay to be a Monday morning quarterback. It's okay to be, you know, a couch quarterback and have an opinion, and it's okay, and have an outlet.
Yeah.
But when the outlet and the opinions take over and impact then how the trained professionals are responding, and that they are tailoring now their professional training to meet the needs of this open market so that they can, quote-unquote, compete, I think that's contributing also to some of what we're seeing in terms of how information is disseminated. And I think that also impacts and affects how we look at and how we view the team. And I think that that's real. I mean, you know, and I think that all of those things, I think, are creating this perfect storm. And I'm curious to see where does it end, because at some point, it's got to hit. The ceiling has to hit its head in terms of information dissemination and professionalism on all sides, from the media outlets to the team, and as you said, to the main office.
It
will be very, very interesting to see. See, this is why I'm going to miss you when you leave, because, you know, I don't really know how many listeners we have, but if for those who are not listening, they are missing out on some really quality conversations and discussions with regards to professional sports.
We are solving all of the problems of the world in regards to professional sports, people.
And we have great debates, even when we disagree.
That's very true. Very true. Respectful, where you don't have to agree, but you can still respect somebody. Again, going back to Goodell. See? That ass hat.
Okay. Well, speaking of,
I don't know if I can say ass on the radio, but I just did.
I think it's kind of too late.
We have
a little more flexibility. Thing is how, you know, we're not on a major media outlet yet, and I'm going to continue to push that caveat yet, because I think that we're so fabulous in what we do. So, Ms. Fabulous, if you have a much less biased opinion, I want to hear, before you leave, what are your thoughts and opinions on the Redskins situation? Because I know how I feel, especially, and I think considering, and I just want to throw this out here, yes, everyone knows I'm a diehard Cowboys fan. However, I do not let my fanhood impact my objectivity, because I have the highest respect for the fan base and the culture and history. Again, I'm not talking about the team name. Talking about the culture and history of what this team means. I'm going to tell you, I hate the name. Oh, did I tell you, I hate the name, and I will be so happy when it changes. So that's my two-second rant. But what this organization means to this area and what this organization means to the history of the NFL, because when the Skins stink, it really lessens the value of the rivalry with the Cowboys. And so I want them to be great, because that intensifies that. But because I'm here, I have a ground view. What are your thoughts and takes? Because did you hear now that Adam Schefter is reporting that they want to trade Griffin?
I just got that alert that there's certain people in the Redskins office that want to trade Robert Griffin III, but the owners are resisting. I think that, again, like we were talking about earlier, the issue with the Redskins, well, I'm going to say on the record, I don't like Jay Gruden. I don't like how he runs that team. I think he sets the wrong tone. I don't like the way he conducts anything. I will go on the record at that. But I think that the issues with the Redskins start at the top. You have owner, you have it. I don't know the owner. I don't know anything about that. I will go ahead and say that. But I feel like and Kishi, I mean, you know Dallas, and you know Jerry Jones. He tries to be a coach. And let me get this straight.
Mm-hmm.
Jerry Jones is not a coach. You are an owner. You are a marketing genius. You are a genius when it comes to business. But you are an idiot when it comes to football. And when he tries to start coaching, when he starts to trying to make the decisions that are not pertinent to the business side of the team, it crumbles, because that is not an owner's job. An owner's job is to say, this is our budget, we have to market, we have to this, we have to that, but my job as an owner is to hire the person that is the best fit for our franchise that can coach the team to win games. That is my job. My job is to not tell you who to put in, who to start at quarterback, and Jerry Jones does it. We all know he does it. And I have a feeling that the Redskins owner has a hand in the football side of the operations, which leads to disarray, leads to leadership issues, and it doesn't allow your coach to reach his full potential. And we don't know what kind of coach, let's say, Jason Garrett is, because Jason Garrett really is Jerry Jones's puppet. And that's not fair
right.
to him.
I agree.
He's not getting to say, hey, this is my – we don't know his style of coaching. I don't – you know, and I think that – I mean, you know, Jay Gruden, like I said, I'm not his biggest fan. But, again, how do we know that the way the team is being ran isn't Jay Gruden puppeting what it is upper management has told him to coach and to this and that? That's not fair. Why hire,
right.
you know, why even bother getting a quality coach if that's how you're going to operate your team? And I have a feeling that the Redskins is, that's what's happening. We saw it with the Raiders. You know, what's his name?
Mm-hmm. Al Davis.
I can't think of his name. Al Davis, thank you. Al Davis.
Al Davis.
The same
yep.
way. How many players that played for the Raiders when Al Davis owned it, how many players have you heard that just couldn't stand the guy? They talked about how awful he was and how, you know, the coaches, everything. The Raiders experienced the same issue. And, you know, I mean, Jerry Jones chased off Jimmy Johnson. I mean, how many more Super Bowls
oh
did
my
Dallas
God.
Have won
oh.
with Jimmy Johnson
and the tuna?
Exactly. But Jerry Jones chased him off because he was micromanaging. And when you get coaches like Jimmy Johnson and the tuna who aren't type of guys who can be micromanaged, they're not going to work for you. And that's the issue
no.
with some of these teams. People want to know why the Patriots are so successful. Well, one, Tom Brady, obviously, and Belichick. But a large part of our success is that we have an owner, Robert Kraft, that allowed Belichick to be Belichick. Kraft says, well,
I agree.
What about this? And Belichick says this, and Kraft goes, okay, because Kraft knows he's not a football genius. He hasn't been
yep.
coaching. You know what I mean? And that's the issue with
mm-hmm.
a lot of these franchises. I think that's what's going on in Washington. You know,
yeah.
Dallas, I think that's a big part of why Dallas hasn't been super successful in the last, 10 years or so. They've been really trying
no.
to
well,
I mean,
the good
stumbling.
Thing is that, and in that regard, I have to agree, and that's why you're starting to see Jerry finally back off and start handing things over to Steven.
Which is why they've been doing better. You know what I mean?
Yep.
So
I agree.
For the last couple of years, why have they gotten better? Well, I think it's because Jerry Jones has gotten his big fat mouth and his big fat butt out of the way and started to allow the team to function the way a team is supposed to function. So I would not be surprised if that's what was happening in Washington. So
I have to absolutely agree, and I think that it's a disservice both to the team and to the fans, as well as it's a disservice to RG3.
Mm-hmm.
Because if
yeah.
you are sticking him with a coach who does not want him, then guess what else? The coach has already set the tone. So if the coach does not want you, do you really think the players are going to play for you? If the quarterback is the undisputed leader of the team, he is not respected.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't care what everybody keeps, oh, he's got this awful O-line. The O-line is – so this is my take. It's not so much that the O-line can't protect him. I think it's the O-line won't protect him.
Yeah.
There's a difference between can't and won't. And I think that's the pink elephant in the room around here, is that the O-line has the capability and the talent, but they have no incentive to protect him
yeah.
because they know that the coaches don't want him. So if you allow the other team's defense to get to him, eventually he will get out of the game.
Yeah.
And then,
well, remember
because
when,
I'm telling you. Uh-huh, go ahead.
Oh, go ahead. Well, no.
I couldn't hear you for a second. What did you say? Remember when what?
Remember when Shanahan was coaching the Redskins? And there was that huge
yep.
issue. I honestly think that Shanahan, I don't think he wanted to draft RG3, but I think
he
did.
That's why he drafted Colt McCoy. I mean, that's why he drafted Cousins.
But that the but wasn't Shanahan coach when RG3 was brought in, right? When he was drafted.
Yep,
Shanahan
he
was
the one who brought him in because that's who wanted
yeah.
him, because Daniel Snyder
and
wanted him. They look at all they gave
exactly.
away for him.
Well, and had, well, yeah, they gave away, oh my gosh, they gave so much away to get RG3. Well, and that's the problem is that they, Shanahan, what he was able to do in Denver, obviously Shanahan is an amazing coach. And when the ownership and the management pressured Shanahan to get the guy that the management wanted, you started to see the destruction of the Redskins. Right then, you started to see because they undermined Shanahan and they didn't allow him to do his job and to coach the team the way he wanted to coach. What coach is going to stick around? So then you bring in Jay Gruden, who then inherits a team who has this tone that management and ownership is in control of on-the-field play. So now Jay Gruden has inherited this mess. And who knows, does Jay Gruden really want RG3? It doesn't seem like it. It seems like Jay Gruden wants presence.
No.
And at that point, then they do need to cut their losses. Let RG3 go somewhere else so he can play and start to build your team. If you want to build your team on Kirk Cousins, then build it on Kirk Cousins. But quit waffling. Make a decision and stick with
right.
it. That's your job. And let Jay Gruden coach the team the way he wants to coach it. So.
Right. Well, and that being said, too, the other part of the problem was they may not have won an RG3, but then he turned out to be fabulous. And it was like, okay, well, all right, fine, the kid is good. But the fact that when he got hurt the first time in the Seattle game and they let him go back again, that right then and there was the biggest mistake. Because once you let him get injured a second time, you literally wrecked your brand-new Ferrari. And then instead of taking responsibility for wrecking the car, you didn't take the time to get it fixed. So you take a Ferrari to the Honda shop and said, put it back together. And then you tried to put the Ferrari back on the road with Honda parts. And then you wondered why the damn thing kept breaking down. And now you want to throw it to the side and say, see, he told you it was no good. No, it was never that it was no good. You didn't do right with your car.
Yeah.
If you want to have a Ferrari, then invest in the Ferrari. That means when it is injured, take the time to fix the car and fix it right.
Yeah.
And that is part of the problem of what has also not happened here in D.C. with this team and with this kid. And it is unfair because a quarterback is only as good as their confidence. And when your entire team keeps sabotaging you, then your confidence is going to shrink. And when your line is not protecting you, I don't care what they say about he holds it too long. What's too long when he barely gets the damn ball and somebody's on him? That's not holding it too long. The team isn't giving him enough time to hold the ball to make a decision. So he's just making bad decisions. And I think that two things need to happen. One, he needs to leave. And if he doesn't have enough sense to get up and have enough self-pride, if the team won't trade him, then ask for the damn trade. Pardon my language. Get up and have some self-pride, RG3, and ask for the trade. And stop sticking around where you're not wanted. That's the one thing my mama always taught me as a child. Don't go chasing no man, and don't go chasing no friends. You go where you're wanted. If they don't want you, to hell with them and keep moving.
Yeah.
Alex Smith did it. He stayed.
Yeah, exactly.
Long enough, and when he realized he was not the one, he said, please send me on. And guess what? He's flourishing. RG3 needs to take his little happy ponytail and braids and get up out of Washington, go someplace else, and if it means you be a backup for a year, then suck it up. Be a backup for a year, because go to a team like Buffalo. Go to a team like New York where they're hurting for a good quarterback. Be the backup until one of their starting quarterbacks can't keep playing. And take this time to rest and heal yourself and prove yourself. And stop talking. That's the other thing. Prove yourself on the field. You can't win the social media game, baby. Win it on the field. Because that's the only place it counts. And that's my rant.
There you go. Very good rant. I agree. I definitely agree.
Thank you, ma'am.
And we're out of time.
Well, thank you very much.
And we're out of time. Well, it was a great laugh. Full-time show for me, and I'm a little sad. I'm going to be honest. I am a little sad. But this is not the end, and I will probably be seeing with air quotes every once in a while for sure. You can bet that I will be coming on ranting about my Pats and the Jets and Rex Ryan, you know, all my triggers. I'll come on and rant about all my triggers. One thing I did forget to mention, I don't know if everybody heard, and this is a long way off, but I thought I'd get it out there now. The Women's World Football Game 3 is happening next year, March 1st through March 6th at, wait for it, very exciting, the New Orleans Saints
yes.
training facility. Woo, woo.
Woo-hoo.
So,
yeah, and there's no fans on the roll. Let the good times roll.
Yeah. So, you can come be a part of history as USA Football continues its efforts to grow and support women's tackle football. This six-day camp is designed to make you a better, safer football player. The final day will consist of full contact 11-on-11 games to show off the skills you have learned throughout the week. You can find their Facebook page, Women's World Football Games 3. Definitely look it up. It's obviously a long way off, but you'll want to make plans for flights and hotel rooms and all of that. So definitely go check out the USA Football. Super exciting. I mean, how awesome would it be to be at the New Orleans Saints training facility? I don't ever plan on playing women's
nice.
Tackle football, but I'm tempted just to go, let me tell you. So
yes.
Definitely.
Absolutely.
Check
well, of
that
course,
out.
I'm from the South originally, so I love the Big Easy.
There you go. I've never been. So.
Oh, we have to make a
yeah.
girls' trip. Oh.
There you go.
Beignets, Cafe
awesome
du Monde. Oh, beignets at Cafe du Monde. Oh, fresh praline.
Yeah.
Oh. I'm
go.
Homesick already.
Now I'm hungry.
Yes, the Southern girl. I know, right? Okay, well, I want to make sure we also end on a good note because this amazing thing happened this weekend that I think, again,
okay.
totally gets to the heart of why we love football and what this amazing sport does and how it brings people together. So I want to end on this really amazing aw moment. So this past weekend, the St. Louis Rams cheerleader, her name is Candace Valentine, got the surprise of her lifetime because while she was there at the game cheering on the Rams, even though they did lose to the Colts in the preseason game, she was totally surprised because her husband, U.S. Marine Corps First Lieutenant August Valentine, surprised her at the game because he came home early from the Middle East and his deployment allowed him to leave. His deployment ended early, and so he came home and surprised his wife at the game. So that is a hoorah for the Marines, and congratulations to First Lieutenant August Valentine and his lovely wife, Candace. And what a wonderful surprise to get and to have her husband come home from deployment. And thank you, First Lieutenant, for your service to the United States and to all of the military men and women across the world. And as a military sister, I know how important that family time is. So thank you all for your service everywhere.
Definitely. That's awesome. Thank you for sharing that. I love hearing about stuff like that. That is so cool. Very cool.
Yes.
So,
okay. Well, I guess it's time to sign off, my friend.
It is. So we want to thank everybody
we'll be
for
back
listening.
Thank you all so much for listening. For all of our friends, stay tuned. We will return next week with our new time. I think we're returning next week with our new time on Monday night. So we will not be on next week Sunday, but
Monday.
I think we return.
Monday.
We return. Yes, not tomorrow Monday because Monday is the first day of school. So I'm not talking to anybody. But next week, right? But no, next week we will return Monday, and Oscar will be here. Yeah, Labor Day weekend. Oh, maybe Oscar will be nice and give us the weekend off. Ooh. Well, we'll see. We'll play.
Let you know.
I know. We'll play it.
Yeah.
I know, right? We'll play it by
play
ear.
It by
but
ear.
Please continue to watch. Please continue to watch. Please continue to listen to the Gridiron Blitz and keep up and continue to follow Erica at PatsFangirl12. Continue to follow Eric on Twitter at FitForLife, life with a Y. Continue to follow me, Keishi's Cuties, KeishisTies, Keishi's Cuties on Twitter, and stay tuned. Continue to talk with us, chat with us, because we will still be here for all of our fans and our listeners, and we're looking forward to the next stage of the show as we continue to grow.
it has been truly a blast, and I have learned so much from you and Eric, and I really and truly hope that you guys will continue to stick around and drop in.
Definitely. And we want to remind you to go to our No Joke Football Shop, Zazzle.com/Gridiron Beauties, and remember to follow at GridironGirl.org and go to GridironGirl.org. We are gearing up, and we will be having our articles. Our book is published, so it's available on Amazon, Football 101, A Simple Guide to the Game Ladies Edition, and Football 101, Simple Guide to the Game Kids Edition. So those are available for purchase, and we are actually going to be running a special. So they will be going on sale. So check my Twitter that she just said, at PastFangirl12, for details. So definitely, and Gridiron Beauty's Twitter page to find out for sure for next Monday where it's Labor Day. We aren't quite sure yet what's going on. We will have to ask the boss. So, yes, it was a great last show, and I will be dropping in. And I just want to thank everybody for, you know, all the people I've been able to meet, you know, air quote meet, talk to, players and coaches and everything. It's been a real blessing. So, I really, you know, want to thank Oscar for the opportunity, and everybody has made this so amazing, and getting to, you know, and Kishi and Eric, it's just been amazing, and you guys have made lifelong friends, and I'm just so fortunate. So, yeah.
Hear him. All right. Well, that is it for tonight's show.
All right.
I wish we had some kind of cute signature sign off, but I guess good night will work. And until anon.
Right.
All right. Bye bye, everybody.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Bye.